Money and markets. I'm using the Wednesday close one day after the quarter close, just because I'm recording this week early due to the holidays. The DAX is the star performer. The Germany top 30 companies up 23% so far as of the Wednesday close. U.S. dollar index is up about 8.7% this year. That's after being up 12.5% this year. So it's the dollar's on quite a tear. It's at 90, trading around 98 right now. It peaked at 100 and back down. But it seems to show a lot of strength. Developed markets up 6.23%. The 20-year plus Treasury ETF, TLT, up 4.93%. Emerging markets perked up particularly today, closing at 3.4%. Gold up 1.8%. The aggregate bond ETF up 1.3%, and the S&P disappointing performance, flat, up a little bit today so that it could close flat. Thanks to the Fed's recent dovish position, U.S. bonds are outperforming U.S. equities. So let's just look at that again. The long Treasury ETF up 4.93%, the aggregate corporate bond up 1.3%, the S&P flat. There's no doubt that the U.S. dollar, a strong dollar, is hurting corporate profits, and that hurt is not over because the dollar could go much higher. I should point out if you look at the stocks on the S&P that have buyback programs, they're up about 2.5% for this same period, so the buyback stocks continue to outperform the general market. As I said, the hurt is not over. The dollar could go much higher. If you look at a list of corporate profits, the percent of corporate profits that come from or have foreign exposure, the average for the S&P is approximately 46%, almost half. The highest sector is information technology at 57%. So as I said, there's a lot more hurt that continue on corporate profits, and that means a struggle for the U.S. stock market. If you look at seasonal patterns, we're in a pre-election year. It should be strong, but let's see. Global stocks are doing well. The Wall Street Journal noticed today, and that's as a result of quantitative easing globally, at least 17 stock indices saw fresh highs in the first quarter, including the U.S., the U.K., Germany, and India. Some 20 more hit their highest level going back a year or more. So quantitative easing is no doubt is lifting the equity. As you can see from the blog and the site this week, debt is on my mind more than equity. When I first mentioned debt equity swaps about a year ago, I kept getting lots of questions. And so I decided it was time to drill down with you on both the debt equity system so that we could come back to the debt equity swap question with a lot more depth. Because if you get into the logistics of how debt to equity swaps may occur, whether they're formal or informal, it requires a sort of more drill down on the nuts and bolts. So in addition to our second part interview with Dr. Farrell this week on debt, there are two commentaries that I posted. One, how low can you go? The cumulative impact of falling interest rates. It was part inspired by a Swiss Re study, the leading insurance company on financial, or one of the leading Swiss insurance companies, a study on financial repression, which I've also put up on the website. You can find it introduced and linked there. There are three things happening, and they're part of the squeeze of the slow burn, and I describe them in the commentary, How Low Can You Go? One is low interest rates. If you go back and look at 1990, a $100,000 deposit would have earned about $8,000 to $9,000. In 2005, it would have earned about $5,000. In the last year, it earned maybe $300, $400. And so instead of making $40,000 over the last four or five years from a $100,000 bank deposit, a saver is earning $2,000. That's $38,000 short. That's a huge short. And you're seeing people who are not used to worrying about their budgets feeling very squeezed by this. So savers are getting really clocked. No wage growth productivity. I put up a little chart on the in the post that you can see. So we have getting no returns on our capital, no growth in wages as a result of increased productivity. So we're doing the work but not getting the benefit. And finally, you continue to see a rise in the cost of most essentials. There's been a little bit of a respite on gas, but if you look at the price of food and many other essentials, there's no doubt revenues are dropping and expenses are rising, and that squeeze is now, it squeezed a lot of people, but it's now reaching people who are not used to that, sort of having to worry about the basics. Pension funds and insurance companies have now gone 5 years not getting a lot of yield as their portfolio rolls over, and that really hurts their ability to pay out benefits and to meet obligations under annuities, which is why I'm assuming we're starting to see the insurance industry do things like publish the study that Swiss Re did. The second commentary I wrote this weekend was a book review by a very interesting book by an anthropologist who's also a professor at the London School of Economics, David Graeber. It's called Debt, the First 5,000 Years. Graeber really digs in and looks at the history of how transactions have supported trade and commerce, and ultimately arrives at a very similar place as I do, that debt is not a financial system, but a control system, and it has required many centuries of violence to get it to the point where it is now. He also points out that the central banking warfare model is running out of steam, but doesn't see the opportunity to increase wealth while reducing consumption. Everybody just assumes because we have to lower our environmental footprint, that means we all have to give up on growth or the growth of financial wealth, which is ridiculous. I don't think that's true at all. But it does mean we do have to shift to an equity model. I would note Senator Mario Rubio, who's making more and more noise these days, has a tax reform proposal that proposes for businesses to allow asset purchase to be expensed, and get ready for this, to eliminate interest deductions. That would be an exceptionally wonderful world, I think, but very, very interesting. But that would certainly help get you to an equity model. The Iran negotiations continue. The president has his hands quite full with a lot of difficult characters on all different sides of that. And that one's important, so stay tuned. Throughout the business section, you see the same story or the same theme over and over again. Back to basics all around the world, whether it's the global slowdown, the drop in commodities, or global tensions. Companies are pulling back and moving back into basics. A couple of examples: Target and Best Buy move out of Canada. Fresh Market, my favorite market when I'm out in California, my favorite market here, is leaving California. Just went in a couple years ago and now suddenly decided, no, going back to the East. We're watching numerous, at the same time, heavily capitalized players moving in to buy resources cheap. I mentioned the other week Exxon is buying up positions in Russia, but there's no doubt those with sitting on the sidelines with big cash have a real opportunity to buy up assets and resources cheap. The IPOs declined in the first quarter. The reports are in. There were 34 initial public offerings, with proceeds of $5.4 billion. That's the smallest number in 2 years. Some of that is, in fact, the fact that large companies with cash are buying up the new companies. But I think part of it reflects this pulling back in and the sort of slowness that's hitting in all sides. It's a very interesting editorial this week from Andy Kessler, former hedge fund manager, saying the glory days of private equity are over. The buyout game has squeezed and flipped about everything that can be squeezed and flipped. So it's back to basic. He points out that very little of the private equity money is venture capital, which in fact increases productivity, and argues that a lot of the buyout and the leverage buyouts decrease productivity. Hear, hear. I hope he's right. I couldn't agree more. We're all going to have to get back to doing things that, instead of harvesting those who are productive, get back to doing things that increase real productivity. An interesting comment from the China Wealth Fund: they're focusing globally, they said, and more back to basics, real estate, infrastructure, food companies. You certainly see China moving to build infrastructure all around the world. It's part of the Asian Development Bank that they're promoting, and is very much in the news. But interestingly enough, China said they're planning on investing a lot in the U.S., giving either a strong indication that they think the U.S. economy is going to continue strong, or they made the right deals behind the back door, and that's all part of them. But there's no doubt everyone across the markets is looking for companies or equities that can generate a yield during challenging times, that have very enduring market shares or niches. Don't believe what you read about the German wing plane crash. The stories don't make any sense. You know, of course, we had the lone gunman, then we had the lone trader, now we have the lone pilot. There are several logical explanations for what happened. I have no idea what's true. However, the airline industry, I'm sure, would far prefer us to all believe the lone crazy pilot story than the idea that planes can be hijacked by the remote control systems and flown into mountains as part of a geopolitical squabble, which, of course, is one of the plausible options, I believe. I published, when the Fed came out with their comment, I published an article called What the Fed is Really Saying, which bounced quite around the internet. It was called an English translation. I've done it several times when the Fed and the IMF announce, and just trying to help people understand what they're saying, the extent to which the comments make sense or really are political and don't have a logic in economics. Anyway, it seems to really be popular, so I'll try to do more of that so that some of those pronouncements can be more accessible. There's a great DVD video we put up on the blog called What If 3D Printing Was 100 Times Faster by a scientist in North Carolina who's come up with a 3D printer that works sort of bottom up and goes much faster. It was inspired by the creation of the character in Terminator. It's a great example of the speed of innovation, which is so dramatic right now. And what's interesting to me is I've taken several different clients and subscribers and said, look, I really want you to take the time to look at these different areas. In the third quarter wrap-up, to remind you, I went through the different areas that are receiving lots of reinvestment so you could sort of drill down and see what's happening. But if you go in and look at the speed of the innovation, whenever I do this, they come back and say, oh my God, it's moving so much faster than I ever dreamed it was. And, you know, the future's not coming, it's here. And the creative destruction potential is pretty wild. It's one of the reasons I think we're seeing more and more focus on real estate from a variety of different institutional and large investors. And that's because new technology lowers expenses. It can cause a lot of creative destruction, so a lot of companies to fail or incomes to drop, but it lowers expenses. It's very deflationary, and that can increase the value of real estate. So real estate can be a very safe place to be. And there's no doubt about it, given the sort of increased interest in food, real estate also includes farmland, which I think is going to continue to hold a lot of value, particularly farmland that has great water. Drought being a bigger and bigger issue. It's something I just finished doing an interview with Whitley Strieber, which we'll publish at the end of the month, and it's something Whitley and I talked a lot about is the California drought and how long the droughts could last. And I'm going to underscore this. Heads up. I had a commentary up week before last, kickstarting the first-time home buyer. I keep talking about all the different things the feds are doing to juice the homebuyer market. Now they're really facilitating a tremendous ease of terms for the vets. It's a wonderful thing, and I hope it makes it possible for as many vets as possible to buy homes. But you need to pay attention, because there's no doubt coming into a presidential election, the efforts are pretty significant to juice the housing market. What that means is if you're a renter and you can afford to take the risk and buy a home and you're in a place where there's a lots of 3.0 and or foreign investment, you should probably take advantage of the low interest rates, but you don't want to get left out of the market if you eventually want to own your home. There are perfectly legitimate reasons not to own a home. I'll never forget one of the best presentations I saw was from a University of Maryland professor who pointed out that homeowners spend 20 hours a week taking care of their home that renters don't have to spend. So, as I said, there are many good reasons to not buy a home. But if you want to buy a home and your profile is one that can take the risk and you're in an area that's strong economically, if the feds really do what I think they're going to do, it could really you could really get priced out of the market. So keep an eye on that if it's appropriate for you.